powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, Seahawks pre- and post-game show host Michael Bumpus joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. We're all, the three of us, going to take another look, not just at the Seahawks, but at the divisional games this weekend. And before I do any of that, Bump, as we have to ask you every single Friday, since I always assume that you call us from golfing, how are the greens playing?
Hey, the greens are nice. This is when I play my best golf because it rains, so the greens are slow. I can be aggressive, so they're nice. Thanks for asking.
I had the feeling that you were out there. I feel like Curtis was giving me a heads up. Like, I think this might be a good day to ask how those greens are playing. All right, I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to start outside of Seattle first with the divisional round. Jake and I were kind of deciding who we think is under the most pressure. Teams, not individuals, under the most pressure and least pressure. It's really hard not to have the Packers at number one. But then where do you pit the Rams and the Bills?
Yeah, that's good. Packers are clearly number one. Aaron Rodgers, 0-3 versus the 49ers in the playoffs. I believe his playoff record is something like 11-12. Doesn't really match up to how we view Aaron Rodgers. So after that, I have to go with the Rams, man. It's Matthew Stafford. He gets his first win in the playoffs last week. He has a defense that's going to cause havoc for him. He has weapons on offense. This is why they brought him to L.A. to win games like this. And he doesn't have too many years left. He has a baby face, but he's been in the league for a while. So he has to get it done this weekend. And honestly, I think he has a great opportunity to do so. So, yeah, I got to go with the Rams after those guys.
Yeah, it is. It's a great pick. And the other situation that you have here is there's so much pressure on the Rams to be able to pull this off. I mean, pretty much everyone, right? The trade for Matthew Stafford, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, OBJ, right? I mean, they are, taking this approach of we're going to put that thing on our credit card and we're going to max out our mortgage here and see what we can do with it. Is that an approach that you're rooting for, Bump, or are you just, kind of looking at it with your eyes over, with your hands over your eyes, but, you're starting to open up the fingers here because you're just so curious to see what happens?
No, I'm rooting for that approach. I think that is where the league is going, honestly. I think teams are trying to win right now. The days of building from the bottom and draft and doing what the Seahawks did dang near 10 years ago, I think that can still happen in this league, but I think this is the move right now. Just with our world and our society, it's an instant satisfaction type deal. And with all those names that you mentioned, it sounds like Hollywood, it feels like Hollywood, and they're not going to show up in Hollywood if you ain't winning. And I think Sean McVay understands that. I think the organization understands that. So they're going out, man, and they're throwing the black card on the table and say, look, man, it's now or never. And I think it's fun. The reason why I like that approach is because it makes it interesting, because you put more pressure on yourself because you're so star-studded when you look at your roster. So I appreciate both approaches, the slow and steady and the right now. I think it's fun to watch the Rams right now, and let's see what they do.
When you look at the teams that are still here as far as the, I don't want to say underdogs, everyone's in the divisional round, but the lower-seeded teams, the visiting teams, you've got 49ers, Bills, Rams, and what's the one I'm missing? It's very obvious. Bengals. Do any of those seem like an upset to you?
Upset. I think, the obvious, I feel like the upset that could go down are the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. I understand the Chiefs are playing hot right now. Patrick Mahomes has found his pocket. He's not just trying to throw the ball down the field. But we're going to watch a battle of two rising stars. I mean, these guys are both stars already. They got their money. They have high expectations. But Josh Allen coming off the performance he had, 20 of 24 or something like that, only four incompletions, five touchdowns. I mean, it was beautiful to watch him do that, scoring on seven consecutive drives. He's using his feet. I mean, it's just exciting. And then with Pat Mahomes, man, it was nice to see him go through his struggles and then bounce back and kind of center himself. That's the upset I'm looking for. I really think the Bills can go to Kansas City and get that done. But what they have to do is take care of the football. And Josh Allen is known every now and then to have a couple drives, put some drives together, and not be too successful. The reason why I like the Bills is because I feel like they have the best safety combo in the NFL right now. Yes, I know Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs is nice, but My guy, Hyde and Poyer, I mean, those two together on the back end are great. And that defense is awesome. So I'm looking to see if that defense can cause some turnovers, fluster Pat Mahomes, and can Josh Allen have a signature game? I think he's already had one in the first round, but if he can back it up with another one, I think it adds to his legacy, and I think he can do it.
You know, Bump, one of the things that we're talking about with the improvements of the Seattle Seahawks is this new search that they have going on for defensive coordinator. We haven't talked to you since we learned about the move of Ken Norton Jr. What did you think of the move, first and foremost? And two, what have you thought of the names that have popped up in the search? Ed Donatell, Clint Hurt, obviously being within house, Sean Desai, and Joe Witt Jr.
Well, I knew a move needed to be made, right? Disappointing season. Personnel-wise, obviously, there are some things that need to be done, but the organization needed to make a move to have 12 still believe in what they're doing. And they've been calling for Ken Norton for years now, and I think for good reason. I think they've underachieved at times, but also they've overachieved. So I wasn't surprised that the move went down, but I wouldn't have been surprised if it didn't go down. Now, moving on to who they should bring in, there's two ways you can look at it. You can say, look, we need some fresh eyes in here. It's not working. This isn't the defense that we're used to seeing. Or you can say, look, let's get back to the good old days and really just keep it simple. And that's why I like Clint Hurt. I think that, one, he's a guy that these guys follow and that they love, and Pete trusts. Pete is a defensive guy. If you bring in a defensive guy from the outside in, I feel like there's going to be some challenging going on there. I don't know if Pete is capable at this point of his career into saying, look, my ways are done. Let's bring in a new guy and try his way of doing things. So I think Clint Hurt is the way to go. Guys respect him. He's going to be a head coach in this league. He can hold down the box. The back end is going to be on Pete, and that's what he wants to do too. And that's the other issue. If you bring a guy in to address the big elephant in the room, it's a secondary. Him and Pete are going to sit down before practice, after practice, and they're going to challenge each other. And I'm just like, man, I just want Pete to be in a good space and get back to the good old days. And I think keeping Clint around and bringing him in allows him to do that. But Clint also has a relationship to where he can challenge him a bit. So, you know, all those other candidates, they are qualified. And if they do go that route, I would understand. But I'm going the other way. I say you roll with Clint and let Pete take care of the back end and stop dropping defensive linemen into coverage, and we'll be good.
You know, this is directly related to that last line that you just said. Is there something that you absolutely do not want to see them do defensively next year where you're like, there's no world where you can't fix this?
Oh, my God. Stop dropping big boys into coverage. I saw Vita Vea do it for the Bucs. It makes me want to throw up. I understand it. Trying to give that offensive line different looks. And then I need the nickel, primarily Ugo, to stop acting like you're going to blitz, because most of the time you're not going to
yes.
blitz. Like, you're not fooling anybody.
Takes over here, finally.
Yes. Dude, it is so obvious, and most of the time he gets himself out of position anyways. Like, come on,
yeah.
Dude.
Exactly. It's frustrating at times.
No, it is frustrating. I mean, you know, Bump, it's interesting listening to you talk about, you know, Clint Hurt and hiring from within and you know, Pete taking care of the back end. And if Pete Carroll is willing to take on that hands-on approach, I think it's something that is worth exploring. But at the same time, Bump, when this group has been at its best defensively, I mean, at one point in time, you had a coaching staff that had Gus Bradley, Dan Quinn, you had Chris Richard, you had Rocky Seto, you had a bunch of really, really good, you know, defensive minds. You had Robert Saleh, who was there as a defensive assistant, right? I mean, you just had really, you had a core group of guys that were really, really good that went on, you know, to get other opportunities. You know, how much of it is needing to get new voices, new eyes on the program and help, you know, to whoever the defensive coordinator is going to be, some support in terms of the game plan, support in terms of, you know, coming up with ideas to get guys in the best positions? I that to me is overall what I would love to see moving forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm okay with going with the familiar when it comes to the defensive coordinator, but you're right. You need younger guys with new ideas. I was watching a game the other day and they threw up a graphic. They said at one point, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and LaFleur were all on the same staff with the Washington football team. And because they've had all that success, they're young, they're vibrant, they have all these ideas, they were able to spread their wings and go. I think Seattle could be a spot where you can have that type of effect, the Bill Belichick effect, the Mike Holmgren effect, to where you get these young guys with great ideas under older leadership and allow them to develop, and then they'll go off and they'll spread their wings. Why not do that in Seattle? You know, and I think because of where Pete Carroll is in his career, you know, he might be up to that. So, yeah, I'm okay with bringing the familiar back at the head, but bringing in guys that have new ideas. The great thing about football is one guy's not going to win a game. And the great thing about coaching football is one coach is not going to have every idea and have it all figured out. It's going to take a village to be successful. So let's do that. You know, I'm, like I said, good with Hurt being there, but mm-hmm. I'm with you, Jake. Bring some young blood in there and let these guys grow.
Just as like kind of an offshoot of that, it feels sometimes like the NFL obviously has trends. It's a copycat league, and that works on the field and off. Like, I don't know what you made of the news of the Houston Texans interviewing Josh McCown. It just kind of felt like just getting another young dude in there. Like, it feels like sometimes the NFL copies trends that don't work. It makes me wonder, like, what Cliff Kingsbury's future is going to be in Arizona, whether or not he's actually the answer there. It looks like Zach Taylor maybe is, but it feels like Sean McVay, just speaking of that staff, started this weird trend of, like, trying to copy Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
No other team has made it work.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that's human nature, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, you see someone super successful at something, they've reached a goal that you're trying to achieve. What do? You get as much information as you can about that individual and what they did to get there. So in the NFL, you see young coaches. We've gone, 5-8 years where guys want to hire young. All it takes is one old head to have a great year, and they're like, you know what? Let's go back to the old ways. So you can't fault teams and organizations trying to mimic what other successful organizations are doing. And now you mentioned Zach over there with the Bengals. That's another example. So I'm okay with it, man, because that's just what we do. You know, as a kid growing up, you know, I wanted to be a receiver. So what did I do? I look at successful receivers who were my size. I looked at Hines Ward, look at Wes Welker, and I'm like, okay, I want to do what they do.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're having success. So that's all that's happening. That's just in our nature. That's, you know, but how do you flip that? You have one old guy or one older guy have a great year, and you'll see things switch too. Just like in the past game, right? The game has opened up. When I went to Washington State University in 2004, we threw the ball 35 times, and that was a lot. And now teams are throwing it 60 times, and you see that all across the NCAA. That's just the game, man. If someone's having success, you want to pick their brain, you want to see how they do it and give it a shot.
Okay, related to how offenses are becoming more pass-heavy and developing in the NFL, like, what's the game everyone's looking forward to this weekend? It's going to be Bills-Chiefs, at least nationally. So how do you see defenses responding to that and, like, valuing a defensive passing game more? Do you see different positions valued more? How have you seen defensively the league respond to that?
Yeah, what they do is they're paying these monsters on the edge to get after the quarterback. Because if the quarterback does not have time, he's not going to be able to throw the ball 45, 50 times like a lot of teams are doing. So we're seeing these edge rushers get paid a lot. We're seeing the nickel come into play. Remember when Coleman was here? That was kind of when the shift happened, and we didn't even realize what the Hawks had in Coleman until he was gone. And now we've been looking for a nickel forever. Marquise Blair was going to be that guy. He gets banged up. Ulmighty's giving it a shot. So defenses have to adjust. That's the thing about football, too. I'm an offensive guy. We dictate what's going to happen on that field. The defense has to respond to us. So if you're in a league where guys are passing the football a bit more, you want safeties who have more range. You want corners who can lock down the side of the field. You have edge rushers who can get after the quarterback. That's why they're getting paid $17, $18 million a year if you're a baller. If I could come back as the perfect football player, I'd be an edge rusher and get that back real quick.
Bump, last question for me here. You know, Stacy has been on me, okay? We had this conversation about defensive coordinators and different philosophies and new eyes and whatever. Regardless of what they do, they have to get better on personnel. And, yep. You know, Stacy continues to keep, you know, pounding that away and keep, you know, reminding me of that. So from a personnel perspective, offensively or defensively, Bump, what do you view as priority number one for this group going into this offseason?
Offensively, offensive line. What are you going to do with Dwayne Brown? Is he going to take a pay cut? Are you going to re-sign him? What's that center position looking like? Do you feel good with Ethan Poulsen, Kyle Fuller? What's the right tackle spot going to look like? I think it all starts with the Seattle Seahawks with protecting the quarterback and running the rock. The last few weeks of the season, the Seahawks showed that there's something in there. They can get it done. Yes, the opponents were not the greatest other than the Arizona Cardinals, but I think offensive line is a must. On the defensive side, you got to shore up the secondary and defensive line. You know, thank God for Carlos Dunlap coming on late in the season. Makes those sack numbers look a bit better, but I'm just not sure about the back end. Now, the safety spot, I think we're good. Quandre, bless your heart. Hope you get better. Jamal, I hope Quandre gets better and he gets his money. Mm-hmm. Jamal's already here. DJ's been okay, but I want more competition at the corner spot. When you think of the Legion of Boom, you think of that secondary and you throw Bobby in there as well. No disrespect to that D-line. You have Michael Bennett, all those guys getting after it, but you think of Earl. You think of Sherm. You know, so you think of Chance. That's what you have to get to. Now, not necessarily the same type of attributes those guys had, but you have to be able to lock down that back end. And I think you got to go at the corner spot. Defensive line, you need guys to step up, but offensive line, defense, secondary, and then sprinkling that D-line.
He is Michael Bumpus on with us every single Friday. Bump, enjoy golfing. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, take care.
See ya.
Thanks, Bump.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, how's this for a throwback name? Ben McAdoo has reportedly been hired as the Carolina Panthers offensive coordinator. What's the real headline?
Headline, Ben McAdoo to run Panthers offense. Subheadline, into a wall.
Oh, boy.
You know what? It's like he rose to prominence on the offensive side. He's not like a bad offensive coordinator per se. This is really a combination of like mistakes that he made as a head coach in a rather unglorious tenure there. And also the way he parts his hair. Like, I have to be really honest. It's combined both of those. The way he parts his hair, slicks it back, or parts it down the center has nothing to do with him as an offensive coordinator. But I would be lying if I said that didn't play into the joke.
Well, here's the thing. This is such a blah hire. And when you're Matt Rhule and you need to get your offense going and you need to be able to generate a spark for your group to be able to have an opportunity to continue to coach, this to me doesn't sound like Jay-Z. Remember Matt Rhule saying, hey, it's like Jay-Z. We're
the blueprint.
You know, it took us a while, but look at the empire that he was creating. I don't think Matt Rhule is creating an empire here with the Carolina Panthers with Ben McAdoo as his offensive coordinator. Okay. So when it comes down to that, I think this is a bad hire. I don't see the upside in it whatsoever, and this is a pretty easy way to get yourself fired, going past this moment. So I'm very confused by it, but more power to you, and, the dreams and beliefs of Jay-Z, I think, have gone in the wind.
If Matt Rhule is Jay-Z, does that make Ben McAdoo Beyonce?
Absolutely not. Take those words right out of your mouth.
I think that's what it means.
Absolutely not. No, because Beyonce made Jay better. Ben McAdoo, everyone's making fun of this hire right now.
Or does it make Ben McAdoo Kanye West?
Oh, so he's going to make...
No, Kanye West is actually talented. I know people hate him sometimes, and he drives
I know,
crazy,
but he was, but... he very good,
Ben
close
McAdoo
friends with
Jay-Z. Ben McAdoo isn't even part of Jay-Z's life. He isn't even part of his world. That's the entire point. Is listen, Matthew, if you want to be like Jay-Z, would Jay-Z have done this?
Takes 7 years. Took 7 years for Jay-Z
next
to
headline.
Get an empire.
Good gracious.
Headline rewrites.
After next season, he's going to be talking about Moses, how it took them a long time. 40 years of wandering through the desert, but eventually they got there. You watch.
It's going to be him just selling it. It's just going to get larger and larger and larger. Look, it took a decade for Bezos to really make Amazon something. You know what I mean?
Headline number two. Sean McVay says that Rams left tackle Andrew Whitworth and safety Taylor Rapp will miss Sunday's game against the Bucs. What's the real headline?
NFL fans could finally see Tom Brady in a conference championship game.
It's been so long since that's happened.
It's been at least, I would say, a calendar year.
Tom Brady will, if he wins this week, he'll have played in the same amount of NFC championship games as Pete Carroll and the Seahawks have had.
Why do you wake up wanting to hurt people? You wake up and you just
wanted to throw that out there. Just want to remind everybody.
It's unbelievable.
Now the Rams still have two of the most important players, Aaron Donald and Cooper Kupp. but
yeah, Matthew Yikers. Stafford, Von Miller,
Yikers.
Yeah, it's not great, but look, I think that they've been able to get by without Taylor Rapp before, and you know, losing Whitworth to me is the bigger loss. We'll see how they're able to manage that, but going up against JPP and going up against Shaquille Barrett, yeah, that's a pretty difficult task, and so you know, Sean McVay has got to figure out how he can put his left tackle in the best position to protect and be successful. But I still think that this game is going to be a very good close game, especially if Aaron Donald, Von Miller, and Leonard Floyd in that group from a pass rushing perspective can make life difficult on Tom Brady.
You make fantastic points, you guys, but I am still stuck on and laughing about Jake's joke about Moses. And I'm just thinking now of like the years getting longer and longer, him being like, you know, it takes some sea turtles 100 years to mature.
This is the way we're going. I don't know. I mean, we'll see if he can buy himself that kind of time. But I got a feeling that we're not going to see Matt Rhule as the head coach of the Carolina Panthers next year.
Headline rewrites.
Getting people texting, Seahawks have been in 3 NFC championships. I said in Pete Carroll's era.
Yeah, let's calm down.
Calm down, 206. Headline number 3, the Kraken have won 2 in a row for the first time since November 29th.
Oh.
They beat the Sharks
Stanley
last
Cup,
night.
Here we come.
3-2.
West
what's,
for the cup.
What's the real headline?
Real headline.
The merchandise is coming back.
The Kraken are undefeated since getting a team dog. It's not even a joke. It's science.
Yep.
Just keep getting puppies. Keep bringing puppies into the building, and the wins will just roll in.
Stacey,
also, Quest for a Cup.
Leave it to you
to
just take it a little too far. Just a hair too far. You know, can we just see how one dog goes? I'm still trying to figure out what Davy Jones's role is going to be within this
organization. Motivator. What do you mean his? What do you mean his role within the organization? Have you not seen that they've won 2 games and that everyone loves him? His role is to be there and be a motivator and bring the juice. He's like,
yeah,
Luke,
but
it's
turf
like
the
Luke
dog
Wilson. Remember when
Turf
Pete
the
Carroll
dog
said
isn't
Luke
there
Wilson
on game day?
Juice? Well, Turf the dog is he does his work outside on the lawn. Like he cleans up and rides in a wheelbarrow. Davey has a different job. Davey's inside the building. He's
so
more of a
it?
Motivator. He's like a team, you know, a team character coach. Like Jack Easterby.
Boy, I hope he's not like Jack Easterby.
That's, all of a sudden, we're hearing
bad
work
dog.
Out, right?
Bad dog.
Really got, Davy Jones is really in Ron Francis's ear about stuff, and it's really they've traded all the players
for
dog
biscuits.
All right, taking a look around the rest of the NFL, including the latest injury updates, and also a wild story about which team has been by far, I don't want to say the most penalized, has benefited the least from opponent penalties. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, let's take a look around the rest of the NFL this hour of Jake and Stacey. By the way, brought to you by the Pro Club. We'll start in New Orleans, where flashback that game between the Rams and the Saints that was going to determine who represents the NFC in the Super Bowl. One of the most infamous no calls in NFL history, with a very clear defensive pass interference not called against the Rams. To this day, it should have been the Saints in the Super Bowl. I will die on that hill. I digress. The ruling or non-call was so controversial that the league started amounted to 1-year rule the following year to make pass interference calls or non-calls reviewable. They ended up taking that away. But anyways, so I say that because, Jake, there was a bureau that looked into calls against all the teams. So the review is teams whose opponents get called the most. So not necessarily like, are you being penalized the most, but the no calls that your opponent is getting. So how many times do you have moments like that where it was clear defensive pass interference, they didn't get called? Where it was clearly holding, they didn't get called. And you just feel like, can we get some here? Can we get some help? Because we're not getting flags that help us. In that category, the Saints, far and away, have seen the fewest penalties called against opponents nearly every year for the last 5 seasons. No other team has touched that. So if you were thinking, Seahawks fans or anyone else listening,
jeez,
oh, it's my team that never gets the calls, It's not. It's the Saints, and more than any other team.
Yeah, this is if you're a Saints fan and you woke up today and you're trying to have a good day, yeah, you can say that that one's ruined with this new piece of information. I mean, look, the Saints on the last couple years of Drew Brees, they're trying to capitalize on those years, and with that 2017 draft class, that was their last Super Bowl window, like true Super Bowl window, and not having the refs, you know, basically, you know, not helping them out in this by calling, making the right calls, is just, that's devastating. That hurts. And knowing that the Rams game, that NFC Championship game, is going to be seared into your brain forever, thinking to yourself, what if, right? I mean, that's just the truth. And I would be devastated, just like, you know, Seahawks fans were devastated for forever, you know, over a decade. With the you know, no calls or the bad calls that happened in that 2005 Super Bowl. I mean, I still remember that. I still remember the emotions that I have as a Seahawks fan, you know, watching, you know, Big Ben, you know, get called for a, you know, touchdown when it clearly wasn't a touchdown. The pass interference call that was complete and utter garbage. I mean, to me, this is... Whew, man, just bringing up those emotions, I feel for New Orleans fans in New Orleans as they, the New Orleans Saints, as they woke up today and saw that piece of information. That's really, really frustrating.
All right, so some other notes from that study. By the way, the Saints ranked 30th, 31st, 32nd, and then 31st in four consecutive years. The Packers have finished in the bottom 10 in each of the last five seasons. Not as bad as the Saints, but in the bottom 10. The Vikings have finished 20th or worse, so they're also not really getting too many calls that benefit them. And then on the opposite end, the Pittsburgh Steelers have benefited the most from getting opponent calls against
Shocker.
Them.
Shocker. Shocker.
You're putting your tin hat on. All right, so next story.
Move
here.
Move on. Now, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Now, it seems kind of weird and tacky in real life. It's weird and tacky to talk about what people make or don't make. In sports, it's one of those things that's like just publicly out there and people discuss it. And it's actually really interesting when you talk about incentives with contracts. So ESPN has their list of players who either made or fell just short of like huge sums of money based on performance incentives. For instance, Mario Addison. One sack away from $250,000. Meanwhile, Tom Brady made $500,000 for making the playoffs. Jadeveon Clowney misses out on $500,000 from not making the playoffs. Marcus Golden would have had another $1 million if he just had two more sacks, and this one kills me. Chris Jones, who is phenomenally talented for the Kansas City Chiefs, needed 10 sacks to make $1.2 million. He finished with 9.
Oh. Gosh.
Man, that's killer. Oh, it's killer.
Oh, those performance incentives. Oh, man, they'll get you. And just thinking about that's going to haunt you, too, you know, being able to add it to the bank. Look, Tom Brady making $500,000 or losing out on $500,000, that's not going to put a dent in his worries whatsoever. But somebody like Marcus Golden, another $1 million? Are you kidding me? I mean, that's a huge difference. I mean, oh, man, that is... That's incredible. Could you imagine, Stacey, if you, it's like in our job, if you could equate it to our job, if you get out of the break on time, just two more times
and
to
like
end the week.
And it's like seconds away.
And you get $1 million because of it. You get an extra $250K. Oh, boy.
Something that you would do on any other day or something that you're like, I was so close. Yeah, man, it's a bummer. Obviously, there's a list of other guys that did make their incentives, so they've got to feel really good about that. All
Heck
right,
yeah.
Next story here. We're getting back to injuries. We already went over a couple for the Niners. Nick Bosa still in concussion protocol. Warner and Jimmy G expected to play. Let's get to Green Bay, the Green Bay side of things. They are, per ESPN, expected to have Randall Cobb in the lineup. Meanwhile, Marquez Valdes-Scantling and David Bakhtiari, questionable.
Yeah, that, it's
Excuse
unfortunate.
Me. Valdes-Scantling was doubtful. Sorry.
Oh, doubtful. Okay. So the Valdes-Scantling being doubtful, that hurts them. He is their down-the-field big play weapon. and has really started to come alive this year in particular. He's been a very hit-and-miss type of receiver. He's come up with a ton of big plays, also, you know, make some big mistakes. But getting Randall Cobb back would be huge for Aaron Rodgers. They have great chemistry over the years and somebody that can work over the middle of the field to complement, obviously, the great Devontae Adams and what else they have going there. But I think that overall, the big one in the matchup is not necessarily getting Randall Cobb back, but if David Bakhtiari was not able to play, that'd be a huge blow, knowing that San Francisco is going to get Nick Bosa back, is going to have Jimmy G playing, is going to have Fred Warner playing. So, you know, the 49ers, they were coming in this game banged up and wasn't looking good, but I think a lot of 49ers fans can breathe a collective sigh of relief that most of their key starters are going to be playing in this game.
Now, the 49ers could be without Taylor Rapp on the defensive side of things. Meanwhile, the Cincinnati Bengals, I mentioned this yesterday, Trey Hendrickson is on that practice report, but according to ESPN, he did clear concussion protocol. So you'll see him on there, but he's expected to play, which is a huge boost for the Bengals. That being said, Jake, I know the Titans are a disrespected one seed. I understand that. And I'm going to be rooting for the Bengals. I would love to see the Bengals continue to win. How do they do it? How does a world exist where the Bengals beat the Titans? The Titans are getting Derrick Henry back.
Well, I mean, you have to bottle up the run game, and you have to be able to do it. Look, I mean, I think about I think about game two for the Seahawks. Seahawks were able to put up 30 points, and they were able to bottle up that run game pretty good for the majority of the game. And then you see the explosion happen for Derrick Henry at the end of the third quarter and into the fourth quarter. And the Seahawks were not able to sustain drives long enough at the end of the game to keep the ball away from Derrick Henry, who was clearly rolling and playing at a high level to finish the game. What the Bengals have to do is they have to start fast, but they also have to finish. They have to be able to control the game once you get up to that lead and not allow Derrick Henry to start to really take over, and that time of possession really starts to swing towards the Tennessee Titans. Now, I've said that the Tennessee Titans are one of the weakest one seeds I've seen. I stand by that. But that is not to slander them in saying that they don't have a really good group. They have gotten to the one seed without Derrick Henry. Why? Because the line of scrimmage, they own on both sides of the ball. They have an amazing defensive line. They've got a really good running attack, and that's how they've been able to win games with big play ability. So I think that is going to be the formula. If they do win, you're going to see it be pretty consistent.
There's plenty at stake for the team still in the divisional round. We'll tell you why that matters for the Seahawks, though, next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Who's under the most pressure to win this weekend? Think about your answer. We're going to open up phone lines in about 15 minutes. Jake, we talked about who we think's under the most pressure. I couldn't figure out whether the Rams were under more pressure than the Bills. I settled on the Bills being under more pressure, coming off a really hot start from Josh Allen, all the hype in the world. I think more people are going to be watching the Chiefs-Bills game than any other game. That being said, I think the Rams' window is a little more complicated. But I think the Packers have to be the team and quarterback under the most pressure this weekend.
Yeah, and I don't know if that is – I don't know if we're hyping up the fact of, look, what can this game mean? But it just feels like there needs to be a payoff, right? That's why I think the pressure that we pick for the Packers is absolutely there. There needs to be a payoff for – what this organization has been able to put together, and Matt LaFleur, you know, taking that next step, being able to say, I'm one of those head coaches that has been able to get my team to a Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers being able to get over the NFC championship hump that he has not been able to get past in quite some time. I mean, it just feels like there's no doubt there's a ton of pressure on this group. But I wonder if it will impact their future with Aaron Rodgers, right? Is Aaron Rodgers come to the conclusion that he wants to stay in Green Bay? Or is whatever happens, given, you know, either week, you know, going to trigger an emotional response from Aaron Rodgers and him say, you know what, I don't want to be here in Green Bay anymore. I mean,
yeah.
It just seems like a lot is up in the air with this team, and they're desperately needing some sort of payoff.
Hear me out. I think the Denver Broncos and their fans are absolutely rooting for an ending like the NFC Championship, where Aaron Rodgers is gonna leave feeling like, I got you here, and you cost me this game. Like, that's... I would bet you anything that, in a weird way, Denver Broncos fans and 49ers fans rooting for the exact same outcome in this one.
Oh, there's no question. And I would also say that the Pittsburgh Steelers as well, right? Like, if you're a team that's needing a quarterback, like, if I'm Pittsburgh, you know, there might be able to be a little pitch there that I could make if I'm trying to lure, you know, Aaron Rodgers away. So, you know, got
maybe
Denver
Matt LaFleur
and
under
Pittsburgh.
Some pressure here.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I do think, now, not in terms of him losing his job or
anything like
that, but, you know, I think in terms of the stratosphere of where do you put him in terms of the top coaches in the league. Right now, I think Matt LaFleur has absolutely earned the right to be considered one of the better coaches in the NFL, but you're able to elevate yourself if you're able to get to a Super Bowl. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of pressure on the Green Bay Packers and for this organization to have, like, a collective sigh of relief of, like, okay, we were able to do it, we're here, and we feel like we can get some stability in terms of long-term success over the next couple years. We can get past the Jordan Love fiasco, and we can move forward together.
Now, this is less about pressure, because I don't think there's a ton of pressure on the 49ers. I mean, yeah, there are questions, you know, surrounding the team and all of that, but I think most people didn't expect them to get this far. They were a long shot. They kind of bounced in by being just genuinely, like, one of the better teams towards that later stretch of the season. And I'm taking the Packers over them, but I also wouldn't be shocked if the 49ers won. Like, that's kind of how they are as a team this year. That being said, while there's not a lot of pressure on them, there's a weird amount of, I guess, impact that their story could have locally. And by that, I mean, I always hear from people that are fine with trading Russell Wilson. You know, oh, well, a team like the 49ers does it. They just have Jimmy G. Or a team like the Rams did it when they had Jared Goff. And that's totally fine. And for the most part, people have been able to say a franchise quarterback gets you a Super Bowl win. All the pieces around you will help get you there. But the quarterback being great gets you the win. Does that narrative change a little if Jimmy G and the 49ers continue to advance?
It might. It might be a growing sentiment here locally, but I would say, what makes you think that you can be that team, right? What does this roster, is this such a great roster? Did we witness this, you know, team win a bunch of games without Russell Wilson? Or did we see that this roster was significantly, you know, was this roster significantly better than most of the other rosters around the NFL? The answer is no. Right? So there is a lot of work that would have to go into building that way. And if you're going to take that approach, Stacey, then guess what? That means that you're willing to rebuild. That means that you're willing to start over. And, you know, equating the fact that Pete Carroll is your head coach right now, he wants nothing to do with that. So I just don't even think it's a realistic possibility or strategy for this group. You need Russell Wilson to play at his best. You need him to be a part of this thing in order to give you the best chance of not only making the playoffs, but going to a Super Bowl. And you got to figure out how you can make the roster, you know, better around him, or you know, add, you know, certain pieces to, you know, add the right pieces to make this team better and propel them forward. That, to me, is what I'm looking at with this group. That might be a favorite sentiment. But, Stacey, do you disagree that they could move in that direction and immediately win if they were to go and trade Russell Wilson this offseason?
Yeah, as in, like, I disagree with that. I think you're closer to a Super Bowl with the pieces that you have at the top. I don't mean, like, every single piece on your team. I mean, like, keeping the biggest parts of your team in place puts you closer than starting over and rolling the dice and hoping for development. Because there's always a chance that you bring in, like, let's say that you do get first round picks and you're like, fine, we're just going to build up and get all this talent and then just have a quarterback who's serviceable, because we've seen other teams do that and be successful. Well, you've still got to wait for that talent to develop. Maybe someone comes into the league and splashes and is phenomenal. Maybe someone comes in and needs a year, two, or maybe three to develop. Like, you aren't guaranteed that your best players will all be at their right. best in the same window, which gets me to the next team that I wanted to mention, which is the Rams. We're against the clock, so we're going to come back talking about them. But I want you guys to call in. Who's under the most pressure this weekend? If you want to join this conversation, you should. 206-421-3776. Again, that number is 206-421-3776. Jake and I are going to continue this conversation next. We want you guys to join us. Call in now.